Hello, this is Frank Bell, and today I would like to talk about Enlightenment 17. There was a lot of excitement towards the end of last year when Enlightenment 17, also known as E17, was released. It was the first major release of Enlightenment since the late 1990s. Many people who had used Enlightenment back at that time had memories of Enlightenment's visual beauty. Enlightenment is a very old desktop. It predates both KDE and GNOME. It's visually attractive, having been designed with visual beauty in mind and highly configurable. The way it's configured really reminded me more of FVWM, which I experimented with for several months out of curiosity a couple of years ago, than of the more recent environments of GNOME and KDE, XFCE, and their offshoots. The idea for this podcast started with a question on Linux Questions from 5150 about how to achieve a couple of effects in Enlightenment. It piqued my curiosity, so I hopped over to my Linux Mint computer and installed E17, and actually quite liked it. I was able to answer part of 5150's questions at that point. I wasn't able to answer the rest until much later. Anyone who's interested can search Linux Questions for threads by 5150 and turn it up. The interesting thing is that even though in Mint, Synaptic Package Manager tells me that I have an E17 installed, the actual version that is displayed when I do an About on the Enlightenment menu is 16.999.something.something.something. So in a spirit of experimenting, I tried installing E17 on my Slackware machine. I first installed it from the Slack builds, but the version from the Slack builds gave me a segmentation fault when I spent too much time in the configuration menus, and not really doing anything complicated either, just messing with clock settings or moving objects around in the panel and so on. So I posed a question on Linux Questions, where I do like to hang out. It's a nice place to unwind at the end of the day. And somebody suggested getting the version of E17 designed for Slackware from the Slack E17 page on SourceForge. So I uninstalled the Slack build, installed the Slack E17 build, which installed very quickly and easily, by the way, and it ran without issue. I liked it so much that I installed it also on my main computer, my Dell 1545N laptop, also running Slackware Current. And when I do an About on those two machines, Enlightenment tells me I have version 17.0 or 17.1. In fact, I think I'll check it right now and go left click to bring up the menu and then to Enlightenment and About, and it tells me I have 0.17.1 on the machine I'm using for recording this podcast. So this presentation will focus primarily on the Slack E17 build that I'm currently using. One of the differences between Enlightenment and GNOME or KDE is Enlightenment uses its own libraries for rendering the desktop, and its libraries enable it only to render the desktop. It does not provide the libraries that you would need or the dependencies to run application. It is strictly a desktop environment. There are three sets of Enlightenment libraries according to the website. The core set of libraries required to compile the window manager, an extra, which libraries are not required to run the window manager, but are still, as the Enlightenment website rather confusingly states, part of the official library ecosystem. And there's also a set of experimental libraries which are created when updates are being designed and either eventually get discarded or rolled into the existing core libraries. This is the first of two podcasts. In this one, I'll give an overview of Enlightenment and how it works. And in the next one, I will dig into some of the how-tos of some of the configuration options, because they don't work the same way as in the more commonly used GNOME and KDE and their offshoots and derivatives. As I said, Enlightenment dates back to the mid-90s, and some of the configuration dialogues really have a mid-90s feel to them. The end result, though, is quite nice. When you run Enlightenment for the first time, or you run it as a new or a different user from your common user, it will present a series of setup dialogues. The first one will ask you to choose a language. If you select the system default, as opposed to selecting a language off the list, it will then display a confirmation to make sure that the system default is indeed the choice you want. Next, it will ask you to choose a profile, a mobile profile or a standard computer profile. After you make your choice, it prompts you to choose the title bar size for your window. And the three times that I've run this dialogue, well, probably four times actually, it pictured six different choices so you could see how they would appear on the screen, and you would click on the size that you want to make your default. Then it prompts you to choose what type of mouse focus you want, whether you want Windows to come into focus on mouse over or by click. I choose click. I don't want a window to come into focus unless I tell it to. I commonly have several windows open, and in navigating back and forth to the menu and from one window to the other, I don't want other things popping up in my face. Then it will install ConMan, or Connection Manager. I went to the Connection Manager website, and it appears to be the program on which the GNOME Network Manager is based. It installed ConMan on all my computers. Even though on one of them I'm using only the wired connection, I have actually never used the wireless on this particular machine except to make sure it works. And on the other two, I was already using Wicked. The two Slackware machines, I was already using Wicked as my network manager. And the oddity is, on when I looked into ConMan on one of the Slackware machines, I clicked it and it said, hey, here's my icon, but there's nothing there. It's not working. That seemed to me rather odd, and I think the dialogue would be improved if it would sense whether or not you needed ConMan or whether you had a different connection manager, or at least gave you an option as to whether or not to install it. That's just me. The next screen gives you an opportunity to make some choices about compositing and video options, whether you want OpenGL compositing. I think there's a third choice there. It does investigate your installation to see what you have, because I noticed on the older machine, I had two choices. The newer machine, I had three choices, but I can't remember what they were, and I was too lazy to go back and check. After that, it asks you a yes or no question whether you not want Enlightenment to check for updates. I said yes. I learned the purpose of this on a episode of the Kernel Panic podcast, and there will be a link to this in the show notes. When someone checks yes to this, Enlightenment goes out and notifies the Enlightenment developers that, yes, this installation exists. It doesn't provide identifying information, but it helps the Enlightenment people keep count of how many installations of Enlightenment there are. If you check no, they don't know you exist. From a marketing standpoint, the higher number they can present when they talk about their usage of their application, the better off they are. And finally, Enlightenment will ask you whether or not you want a taskbar. I'll talk about this a little more later. The taskbar seems to be a specialized variation on what E17 calls an iBox. And when I get into describing the desktop in just a moment or so, I'll go into that. So now you've started up Enlightenment. You're looking at the screen. The default theme on E17 is very gray. First, a little terminology. What everybody else refers to as a panel, E17 calls a shelf. Just as with panels, you can have multiple shelves, but my preference is always just to have one. E17 also has gadgets, and gadgets are comparable to what other desktops call widgets or applets, such as the built-in Enlightenment clock or the built-in Enlightenment CPU monitor. By default, on all the Enlightenment installations I did, the shelf was in the center bottom of the screen and contained the following items: a stylized lowercase e, which was the menu icon. You click that, the menu appears. A desktop pager for switching from one desktop to another. By default, there were four desktops, pretty standard in the Linux world. An iBox. When applications are minimized from the screen, the icons for them or the names of them appear in the iBox. An iBar, which is an icon bar where you can place icons to launch directly from the shelf, much like launcher icons in a GNOME or KDE panel. A temperature sensor, which looks like a little thermometer. A CPU frequency sensor, a battery level sensor, and the clock. In the default installation, left clicking on an empty screen also displays the main menu, much as right click does in the default Fluxbox installation. And a right click displays your favorites menu if you have one configured. And default icons are placed in the upper left hand corner of the screen for your home directory, the root directory, the temp, the /tmp temp directory, and trash. Oddly enough, on both my Slackware boxes, two icons for my home directory appeared. One of them, if I clicked on it, would open up the Enlightenment file manager, which in my opinion looks and behaves in a rather primitive manner. And the other one did nothing. It appeared to be a zombie. This did not happen on my Mint install. I was able in both, so it may have something to do with the Slack E17 build. I was able to delete the zombie icon and have complete functionality with no issues whatsoever. When you start the menu, whether you start it by left clicking or start it by clicking the Enlightenment menu icon on the taskbar, it contains the following categories. If you have favorite applications configured, it will display your favorites at the top of the menu. It will display the word favorite. You click on favorite, your list of favorite applications appears. This is quite convenient for your most used applications. My list of favorites contains GTCam, Opera, Clause Mail, the applications I use almost every day. Some of them every day, multiple times a day. Others several times a week. The ones I want to get to quickly. Then there's an applications category, and it is divided into fairly typical subcategories as you commonly see in Linux menus, such as accessories, development, games, graphics, and so on. Underneath that will be files. On my Slackware machines, it said navigate, and that gave me the list. You go directly to my home directory, to the desktop, to root, to my favorites, or to mounted USB devices. They also appear in there. The next item is run everything. It doesn't really run everything. You don't click it and have all your applications start up. It's more like the Finder or the HUD, and it shows the menu contents as if they were arranged in folders. You can click a particular folder and select and launch it, as opposed to going up and down the menu. It's a kind of a folder representation of the menu, and you can exit it simply by using the escape button. There's an element on the menu to take a screenshot, which I haven't used all that much because I'm a big fan of K-Snapshot. That is my go-to screenshot application. The next item down on the main menu is the desktop item, and that's where, at least on the Slackware box, I can change my gadget setup, I can switch workspaces, I can add or delete a shelf, I can configure the existing shelf, or I can show and hide all the windows. The next item down is the Windows item, and if you click on that, it shows all your open applications. There's also an item to clean up windows and to find lost windows, and since I don't have any dirty windows and I haven't misplaced any, I'm not quite sure what that does. The next item down is the Enlightenment section, and that's where you see About Enlightenment. You can click on the theme item there. It will tell you about your current selected theme. You can use it to restart Enlightenment, which will restart the desktop environment without shutting down any of your applications. If you've made certain types of configuration changes, you might need to hit restart so that Enlightenment rereads its configuration files and it starts again fresh. It's similar to the restart item on the Fluxbox menu. There is an exit or log out of Enlightenment button. We're almost to the end here. Next to the bottom is the settings panel. There's the settings item. The choices include the settings panel, which is a graphical way of accessing all the settings dialogs. They're arranged by category, and you can click to the left or to the right to get the various categories, and then the list appears and you can go to the settings dialog you want. It takes a little getting used to. The terminology is in an arrangement is Enlightenment's own terminology and arrangement. Once you get the hang of it, it's a pretty neat way to navigate. Then underneath the settings panel item, there's one for your gadgets. And if I open the menu and go to gadgets, it gives me a couple of options about configuring the appearance and behavior of desktop gadgets. Now there's one for theme, where you can change your selected theme. Several different options come with Enlightenment. There are others available at the website e17stuff.org. And there'll be a caution about that before I wind this up today. I really like the way the wallpaper works. You can very easily have a different wallpaper on each desktop. And with its commitment to visual beauty, Enlightenment renders the wallpapers very nicely. And I do like my eye candy. I've got over 1,000 different wallpapers that I like to switch among. Almost all of them are nature scenes or geographical scenes. I'm not real big on the abstract design stuff. But I do like my pretty pictures. And when I get into the next version of this, I'll go into some detail about how you can easily set up to have different wallpaper on each workspace, because there's a couple of little tricks to it. A couple of miscellaneous things I wanted to mention. If you open a menu too close to the right side of the screen for all the menu to display, click on, say, menu, you click on applications, and the applications list is cut off halfway through by the side of the screen. Simply move your mouse over into the applications list, and the menu will slide to the left. If you've got additional submenus, you keep moving to the right, the menu will keep sliding to the left so you can see all the choices. The taskbar may be set to show applications from the current desktop or from all desktops. By default, on the installations I have, it was showing the applications from this desktop only. I changed that. I like to show the applications from all desktops. I seldom have more than 6 or 7 applications open, and I like to get to them quickly. If I've got Audacity here open, on desktop 3 and I want to hop over and look at my Opera on desktop 2, I can simply click the Opera icon in the taskbar and Enlightenment will go directly to Opera on desktop 2. Or alternatively, I could click the desktop 2 in the pager and go to that desktop. If Opera were behind something else, I would then have to click Opera. So that fits in with my workflow. The other way you can change directions is the old traditional way of using Alt-Tab. It works quite nicely. On the Mint machine, and because it's a slightly earlier version of Enlightenment, if I have an application open on the screen, there is no icon in the iBox. It doesn't act like this taskbar on my Slackware with version 17.1. It acts like an iBox, so the icon is only in the iBox if the application is minimized. It seems like a subtle difference, but in hopping back and forth between my machines, that's one thing I find mildly irritating. You can also change desktops by moving your mouse from side to side. I'm sitting here looking at Audacity. I move the mouse to the left. It takes me to Workspace 2. And I'm looking at Opera. And I'm looking at my Workspace 2 wallpaper. And I can simply keep doing that. It takes me to 1. And at 1 on this particular machine, it stops. Now, here's another thing. You can drag an application from one workspace to the other by dragging it with the mouse. And I just dragged Opera from workspace 2 to workspace 1, but I can't drag it from 1 to 4. If I want to go to 4, I can right click on the title bar and move to and do some other stuff like that, but I can't just drag it round the clock. Now, there's a little bit of delay when you're doing this, and that delay is it kind of pauses at the edge. It doesn't smoothly slide over. That is configurable. It's an effect. It's not the screen being slow to repaint. It's simply an effect. One thing that's really neat that E17 does, I really, really like this. If you minimize an application to the taskbar, the icon on the taskbar gets smaller. So I'm looking at my taskbar here. I can see that I have gCrellum open fully to the screen, that Claws Mail is minimized, that the terminal is minimized, Opera is open to the screen, and Audacity is open to the screen simply by looking at the icon. Now when I click to go to Claws Mail, which was minimized, Claws Mail also comes back to the size of the window that I had it set to. So simply clicking on the taskbar to go to that application doesn't just take me to the workspace where Claws Mail is, it brings Claws Mail into focus on the screen. And I think that's really nice. I like that. I have gotten to quite enjoy using Enlightenment. I'm a long time Fluxbox user. Fluxbox has been my go-to desktop environment for, I guess, almost 5 years. I know it in and out, and Enlightenment is actually starting to woo me away from it. It doesn't use a significant greater amount of resources. It doesn't go and do a lot of stuff in the background that I don't need done, like KDE. I don't use any of the KDE personal information management modules that Akinadi is supposed to make easier to use. So the mere existence of Akinadi running in the background is one of the things that has kept me from going back to KDE. Although when I first started, that was my favorite. It's very easy to set up key bindings and mouse bindings, or edit them and change them in Enlightenment, and set windows to remain in particular positions or stay on particular desktops in Enlightenment. And those are all things I'll go into when I do the next version of this. I gave a presentation to my lug based on the notes I'd actually been making to do this podcast and prepared a handout to use. I will have links to the handout for anyone who wants to download it in the show notes. And one final caution, I do want to mention this because I actually ran into it myself. You can go to the website e17stuff.org. The link will be in the show notes. That's e17-stuff, and find a number of themes. You need to be careful though, because the theme engine has changed somewhat in Enlightenment 17 from what it was in the previous versions, and if you install a theme that is not updated to work with E17, you're going to find that stuff stops working. I did this, and I can guarantee stuff will stop working. So be careful with that. Other than that, I would say E17 is a lot of fun. One final thing I want to say about the show notes, I include a link in there to the Kernel Panic Oddcast episode that I mentioned earlier. It begins with an very intensive interview of the maintainer of E17. And one of the participants is Jonathan Nato, who's at questioning him about accessibility items. But if you want to learn about E17 and from the maintainer's point of view, and listen to a really good detailed discussion, I recommend that episode of Kernel Panic Oddcast very highly. And I'll be back whenever I can get it done, and King will put it on the schedule, with a more detailed look at some of these configuration items that I've mentioned here. Thank you very much. If you want to email me, you can email me at frank@pineviewfarm.net. Pineview Farm is all one word, no spaces, no punctuation. And my website is www.pineviewfarm.net.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.